I am very grateful to have this wonderful opportunity to be with all of you again in Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. This is the longest duration of time I've been away from this temple since the day it began in 1986. I'm so grateful to be with you again. Thank you. A few days ago, somebody asked me that we read in this book, The Journey Home, that you are sitting on a rock in the middle of the Ganges for 1 month, just drinking Ganges water, eating a carrot. And recently we saw you sitting on a main network television show. I said, what is it like from going from a rock to a television show? What was it like that once you were sitting on a rock in the middle of the Ganges fasting, and now we see you sitting on major network American television? So I thought about it for about 2 seconds, and then revealed my realization that in reality, all it is just sitting on two different rocks in two different locations of the river of life. And then I meditated on Srila Prabhupada. At one time, he was sitting in his rooms in Sri Radha Damodar Temple in the Seva Kunja, where Krishna performs his divine Rasa Lila. Immersed in his bhajan, translating Srimad Bhagavatam, writing purports, right a few feet away from the samadhi of Sri Rupa Goswami. And a little later, he was on the ship Jaladuta in the middle of an ocean. And he was traveling around the world, sometimes speaking to heads of state, to audiences of tens and thousands. But for Srila Prabhupada, whatever the situation, he was simply serving his Gurudev. He was simply trying to please Krishna through his pure loving service. And there is the story in New York City when devotees worked really hard to have the biggest program in the history of Srila Prabhupada's mission at that time. Instead of a little tiny storefront, they actually rented out a sizable hall and advertised, and only a few people came. beyond the few devotees that were there, the audience hardly filled one row out of the many, many, many seats. And Srila Prabhupada spoke with the same enthusiasm, the same empowerment as he would if there was tens and thousands of people there. And devotees asked, or devotees actually afterward apologized that it was such a failure. It was supposed to be such a big program and no one came. And Srila Prabhupada said, "Oh, no one? You did not see? Narada Muni was there." And then he started listing all the other great saints and devas that were there. Nobody saw. Now, whether Srila Prabhupada was actually seeing them physically with his eyes, or whether he was relaying to us that we're always being observed by Krishna, by our gurus, by the whole parampara, in whatever we do. Whether we're sitting on a rock, whether we're preaching to millions of people, some siddhir haritoshanam. Krishna's pleased by the sincerity of our service attitude, not by the physical situation. And wherever that service attitude is, Srila Prabhupada explained, that place is transformed by a devotee's desire into Sri Vrindavan Dham. Vrindavan is the holiest place in all of Brahma's creation. Its location, where Lord Krishna, Sri Radharani, are performing their Nitya Lila, their eternal pastimes, is there, just about 90 miles southeast of New Delhi. But it's not this material world, it's the spiritual world. The Yamuna, Govardhan, the Gopas, the Gopis. It is said that Krishna never takes a step out of Vrindavan. Whether we can see that Vrindavan is dependent on our sincere service attitude. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. When one's eyes are anointed with the salve of prema, spiritual love, then we could see Vrindavan. Otherwise, we see the outer appearance. You see all the sewage and all the garbage that is strewn around Vrindavan today. That's not Vrindavan. That's just stuff on the outer surface. Vrindavan is the ever-pure, transcendental spiritual world that is manifested within this world. But where ever devotees are sincerely serving with unselfish love, without egoism, that place is Vrindavan. Krishna manifests within the consciousness of that devotee, the spiritual world. And Srila Prabhupada in one beautiful purport, speaking on this subject, he gives the example of Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur. We know he was a great acharya who was a grihastha. His beloved wife, Bhagavati, a Paramhamsa lady. The two of them had 10 children. He worked a government job, and we have seen photos of him in some of his occupational wardrobes, which are quite amazing. Sometimes we see him just wearing a simple dhoti with tilak, holding his japa beads. Another time we see him dressed as a royal judge or magistrate in the British courts. Bhaktivinoda, in his writings, he tells us that when he comes to his home and sees his family together serving Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, he sees. He's not just feeling or believing, he's seeing. His house is transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. It factually is Goloka Vrindavan. That is the beauty of bhakti. Is there is no material considerations that can impede us from the complete union with the Lord through devotion. All that is required is our sincerity. At the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was tremendous emphasis on ritual, on caste, on perfect execution of different rites, of scholarship. And the Lord, he excelled better than anybody in his manifestation of doing all those things. He was a Brahmin. He was a sannyasi. He was the most learned scholar. As far as his pronunciation of Sanskrit and mantras, he was Nimai Pandit. He was a scholar among scholars. What it would take 12 years for a top-level Sanskrit teacher to teach a student, Lord Chaitanya could accomplish the same thing in a couple weeks. But yet, the Lord explained that it is not dependent on these material qualifications or disqualifications. Our spiritual advancement is simply dependent on pleasing Krishna. And Krishna is pleased by the sincerity of our hearts. In a few days, some of us will be going to South India for the yatra. Please raise your hand and say Hari Bol if you are coming to the yatra. Hari Bol! There in Sri Rangam is the famous story of that Brahmin who was practically illiterate. He would sit in a courtyard where all the great pundit scholars would assemble every day to recite scriptures and discuss. And he would sit alone to recite the Bhagavad Gita every day. But because his recitation was so inadequate as far as proper pronunciation or even proper understanding, nobody took him seriously. Sometimes he was ridiculed. Sometimes he was looked down upon. So why would he always come there? Why didn't he just stay home and do it? Where the whole world didn't know, wouldn't understand how illiterate he really was. But he would come there every day and recite all the 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita. While the greatest scholars on earth were there reciting Vedas, Lord Chaitanya came to that place. Vidaishta sarveraham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. Krishna tells us in the Gita that Krishna is the knower of the Vedas. He is the compiler of Vedanta. By all the Vedas, Krishna is to be known. That is the goal, to know Krishna. Ragad Vesha Vimuktaishtu Vishayan Indriyaishcharan Atma Vishayavid He Atma Prasadam Arigachchati. By following the rules, the regulations, by following the principles that the Vedas give us, the whole purpose is to please Krishna. And when we please Krishna, we receive his mercy, his kripa. And that mercy is the only thing that can lift us beyond the sufferings of birth and death. That mercy alone can give us the realization of who we really are. And how to love God. Daivi he shugunamayi mama maya duratyaya mame vamye prapadyante maya metad durantite. Material existence, very, very difficult to overcome. These three modes of nature, sattva-guna, raja-guna, tamo-guna, how they're interacting with each other, how they're activated by time, and how they affect the mind and the senses, and how they incriminate the ego in so many selfish activities. It's insurmountable. For a small child to climb to the top of Mount Everest and then climb down the other side and then go through the entire Himalayan range and then come down and walk to the Bay of Bengal, and then swim across to Los Angeles, California, through all the connecting oceans. That's millions of times easier than trying to disentangle oneself from the ropes of the three modes of material nature. Egoism and greed and selfishness. Passion. But Krishna says, one who takes shelter of me. Taking shelter means to receive mercy can easily cross beyond it. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Because Krishna is the controller of material existence. So Krishna does not consider our material qualifications or disqualifications. He considers our sincerity. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came into that courtyard and all the great scholars who were perfectly reciting in rhyme and rhythm and pronunciation all of the different Vedas, he did not acknowledge them. He went to that one simple, illiterate Brahmin who was struggling through the Gita. It probably took him a really long time every day, most of the day, to struggle through. Lord Chaitanya asked him, what he was doing. He said, actually, I do not know Sanskrit properly. I don't know how to read or recite. But my Gurudev gave me the instruction that every day I should sit here and recite the whole Gita. So whatever anybody else may think, I'm trying to please my Guru. Doesn't matter. Krishna explains in the Gita he was reading, one should not be attached to fame or infamy, success or failure, victory or defeat, honor or dishonor, pleasure or pain. Matra sparshas tu konte asitos nasuka dukada, agama payano nityas thams tatikshas bharata. That all of these things, happiness, distress, and the other dualities, they are coming and going like the winter and summer seasons. You can't hold on to anything. One should learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. And on the path of bhakti, we don't tolerate by just gritting our teeth and saying, it will pass, it will pass. I will tolerate. Tolerance means to fix our mind, to fix our words and our actions on a higher principle. Vishayavanivartante niraharasya dehina rasavaraja madasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. That we can rise above all these dualities when we experience a higher taste. That higher taste is Krishna's mercy. The love of Krishna. And that grace is accessed by our sincere service attitude. Trinadapi sunichena taror ivasihishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. To be humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree, very happy to offer all respect to others, and not to expect respect for oneself. This illiterate person obviously had these qualities as he was stumbling in the most materially uncoordinated way through the Bhagavad Gita. And when he told Lord Chaitanya, I don't know what I'm doing really as far as the reading. Sometimes I understand what I'm reading. Sometimes I don't understand what I'm reading. Sometimes I say it right, sometimes I say it wrong. I don't even know the difference. But I'm trying to please my guru. Lord Chaitanya said, what are you thinking of when you were reading the Gita? Which part? He says, as I'm reading, I only see one thing. I see this picture in my mind. There is Krishna, who is Shamsundar. He has a beautiful dark complexion like a monsoon cloud. The essence of all beauty. And he's standing in his chariot as the driver of his devotee, Arjuna. The Supreme Master, the Lord of all of existence, is taking the role of the servant of his own devotee. When I see this beautiful form of Krishna, I'm in ecstasy. Lord Chaitanya, he gave that answer when Lord Chaitanya said, if you don't understand the Gita, why are you crying? Why are there tears welling and flowing from your eyes? Why are your hair standing on end and why are you trembling? And he gave this answer. I'm just seeing Krishna. Imagine, even in its imperfect pronunciation, Krishna was fully, intimately manifesting within his heart. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced that Brahman and said, you are the true knower of the Bhagavad Gita. His sincerity. And through this story, the Lord wanted to show us that whoever we are, wherever we are, however we are, if ever we are, whatever your condition is, there's no impediment to attaining the perfection of life if we're humble and sincere. And part of that sincerity is to be genuinely grateful for the opportunity to serve in any situation. And just to try to please Srila Prabhupada and the great souls. Little Dhruva Maharaj, he was utterly devastated by his stepmother when she insulted him with words that were like flaming arrows that pierced through his soft and tender heart. And he was only 5 years old. And his father would not acknowledge him. He felt not only humiliated, he was made to feel totally worthless, useless. And when his father didn't say anything, he felt betrayed and abandoned by the one person in his life that he trusted the most. When you're a 5-year-old boy and you go through that, it's traumatic. He looked up to his father. His father sheltered him. And when he was in the most desperate condition of his whole life, his father ignored him. So he ran to his mother. She said, Dhruva, there's nothing I can do. Your father really does not favor me. But your stepmother said that the only way you could sit on the throne of your father is if you worship the Supreme Lord, and by doing so, die and then take another birth in her womb, then only will your father acknowledge you. What she said is correct. You should worship the Supreme Lord. So little Dhruva left home with such determination to find the Supreme Lord. He went into the jungle. He was sincere. No impediment. We're sincere. How is a 5-year-old child going to survive in a jungle? And it's not like the jungles today. Today, almost every dangerous species, every dangerous species is endangered. In those days, there was no endangered species. There was millions of tigers and lions and panthers and wild elephants and lots of snakes, scorpions, mosquitoes, spiders, poisonous plants. It's the jungle. And a little 5-year-old boy all alone, walking around even in the dark of night. But he had one thing. He had genuine sincerity. He wanted to find Krishna, Vishnu. So Krishna sent Narada Muni, his guru, who just happened to appear in that lonely, dark jungle where there was not another single human being. Because he was sincere. And Narada Muni first tested him. He said, Dhruva, don't worry about these things. Just go home, play, it will pass. Dhruva said, I want Vishnu. I want to see Krishna. He had a material motivation, but he was turning to Krishna for it. And Narada Muni told him, go to Vrindavan, to the forest of Madhuban, the bank of Yamuna. And there, chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. Worship the beautiful form of the Lord. No impediment. Narada Muni wanted him to worship a deity. He didn't tell Dhruva, take the express train to Jaipur and go to the Pandey Murtiwala and place an order for a deity. Yes, if you do that, it's very nice too. But if you want to do deity worship, Narada Muni said, don't worry. All you have to do is just the mud on the bank of Yamuna. There's plenty of mud. There's unlimited mud. Just make a deity there, made out of mud. And this is how you can worship him. And if you worship that little mud deity with love and devotion, Krishna will manifest himself and accept our offerings. No material impediments. And he did. And ultimately, Vishnu appeared to him and offered him any benediction. You want a kingdom greater than your father or grandfather? I will give you. Dhruva said, I don't want those things. Now that I see you, all of my desires are fulfilled. I want nothing else. Dhruva expressed his only desire was to be the servant of the servant of the servant. I came looking for broken glass, but I found a jewel, the most precious jewel, of the opportunity to serve the Lord with love. There's nothing else that can compare in value to the opportunity to serve the Lord with love. And that opportunity is there for everyone if we just sincerely open our hearts to receive it. Devotees are not impressed by either poverty or wealth in a material sense, in any way. What impresses us is devotion. It's the only wealth for the soul. It's the only true opulence. And even if we are in a completely debilitated state in our deathbed, that supreme wealth is there for us if we just open our hearts to receive it. And that wealth is eternal. It is not only is it not determined by material qualifications or disqualifications, it cannot be hampered or obstructed even by death. When Kuvera asked Dhruva later on, I will give you anything you like. Dhruva said, I only want to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And when ultimately, after ruling the world for many years, Vishnu sent an airplane to take Dhruva back to the spiritual world. Now this is Satyayuga. Thousands of years had passed since that traumatic experience when he was 5 years old. But a symptom of a great devotee is their gratitude is they never forget. Never forget anyone who had ever helped them. Dhruva was thinking in his mind, how could I go back to the spiritual world when my mother's still here? After all, she's the one who told me to go to the forest to worship Krishna. She helped me in my spiritual life. Now, Narada Muni gave him all the detailed instructions. Narada Muni's grace was really the key to his Krishna consciousness. His mother just loved him and wanted to help him and just said, your stepmother's right. The only hope is to worship the Lord. That's all she said. But it was through that motherly love that he was inspired to go to the forest, and it enabled him to meet his guru. So he was thinking of her with such gratitude. And just the thought the Vishnu Duta said, look up there. And he saw his mother was on an airplane going back to the spiritual world, even before him. Such gratitude. Tens and thousands of years later, he remembered that, even in his perfected state. And also it was very interesting, when that flower airplane, or that airplane came to bring him to Vaikuntha, he didn't just jump on and say, I'm out of here. He went to every one of the sages in the forest and bowed down to them, served them humbly, and offered his prayers of gratitude to them. This is interesting, because they were not going back to Godhead. He was. If he had the slightest false ego, he would have been thinking, you guys are still here, I'm going. You know, could have said, when I'm back in the spiritual world, I will pray for you and give blessings so that you could come also. He humbly went to each and every one of them and bowed down and offered prayers, offered gratitude. It's by your mercy that I have this benediction. He was prideless and grateful. Especially to his mother, who wasn't even a sage. And it's interesting how in our Vaishnav literatures, mothers play such a significant role. Our beloved Srila Prabhupada, he gave so many thousands of lectures. Among them, there are, during his very life, physical life within this world, there were two special books compiled from his lectures. Because he would do lecture series in different places. I think you all know those two lecture series that came out in books. One was the prayers of Queen Kunti, and the other was the teachings of Lord Kapiladev. And they're both all about mothers. Kunti Devi was the mother of the Pandavas, who suffered terribly observing the plight of her children for so many years. And when everything was restored and her children were set in a glorious position by Krishna, Kunti Devi offered heartfelt prayers of pure unalloyed devotion to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada did a whole lecture series glorifying the love of this mother for God, for her children, in such a spiritual state, and had it put into a book. And Kapiladev, it was Devahuti asking him questions, his mother, and his replying to her questions. Devahuti, what kind of mother she was. She was a princess, the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu. So beautiful. When she would play with the little ball on the roof of her palace, demigods who were flying overhead would see her and become so intoxicated by her beauty that they would fall off their airplanes onto the ground. Can you imagine? If you go to the most beautiful Bollywood actresses, do you see any demigods laying on the ground? They don't even look in their direction. What to speak of the rest of us? Devahuti, when her father, Swayambhuva Manu, decided it was time for her marriage, he was considering the most important thing in life is beyond this life, the liberation of the soul. Let me marry her to a self-realized soul. Kardama Muni. And she moved from the jungle, she moved from the palace to the jungle. She faithfully served her husband. And she did it with such devotion that Krishna irresistibly wanted to be her child. Such a loving personality. I want to be the child of this person. So Kardama Muni arranged a nice aerial airplane for them to have a nice environment. And Kapila Dev was born. Kardama Muni left home. It was just Kapila and his mother, Devahuti. Kapila Dev's a very special incarnation. Because as far as the scriptures go, he didn't really do anything. He just talked. Right? There's no record of him doing anything. I'm sure he did, but it didn't have much interest to the authors of the Vedas. If you examine the different avatars, Haritra Naya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chuduskritam Dharma Samstapanaradaya Sambhavami Juge Juge. The Lord does amazing things. Narasingha Dev, he was quite active. Varaha Dev was really active. Went to the bottom of the ocean, picked up the earth, and beat up Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha. And Lord Ramchandra, so many incredible, beautiful activities, and slaying of Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and Parasaram. He was quite active. Matsyavatar, Vamana Dev. He walked around three steps, covered the universe, went begging charity. But Kapila Dev, the only record we have is he's just talking to his mother. Very, very special incarnation. But his mother was asking, his mother, with such a deep heart, because she knew Kapila was going to leave soon too, and her husband already left. And she wanted to know the truth. She wanted to understand the goal of life. So just as Arjuna was in desperation when he asked Krishna questions, and Parikshit Maharaj was in desperation when he asked Sukadev Goswami questions, Devahuti, very sincerely, was asking her son questions. And that lecture series of Prabhupada came into a book, The Teachings of Lord Kapila, and Prabhupada was so proud of that book. again, the love of a mother and a son. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya, we know so many stories, how he took sannyas and he was heading for Vrindavan. But Nityananda Prabhu, the first time he heard from Lord Chaitanya his plan to take sannyas, he went to a secluded place and cried incessantly, thinking of the sorrow of Mother Sachi, his mother. So as Lord Chaitanya was going to Vrindavan, Nityananda Prabhu rerouted him to Shantipur so he could meet Sachi Devi and the devotees. And it was Sachi who said, please go to Puri instead. And the Lord did. And at one time he said, whatever devotion I have, it is only due to the love of my mother, Sachi Devi. So I'm bringing these thoughts out from this particular perspective to illustrate the quality of gratitude. An ungrateful heart cannot carry the seed of bhakti in such a way that it can grow. A grateful heart is a heart that is fertile, in which that seed can grow without impediments. And when we are sincere and grateful, and gratitude is not just saying thank you. Real gratitude is something very deep. It means to reciprocate. If someone saves you and they're in trouble, real gratitude is not walking by and saying, thank you for all you've done, but I'm too busy. Real gratitude means to reciprocate and give them in return everything you have. So gratitude to the spiritual master is not just, you know, thank you once a year. Gratitude means you've given me everything. And if I'm grateful, I want to give you everything, whatever I am. Srila Prabhupada showed his gratitude to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he did that by giving all of us Krishna consciousness and willing to do anything and everything to do that. If we're really grateful to someone, we want to actually do something. Connect them to Krishna. Assist them in the service of Krishna. To value the gift we receive from others. On every level. Anyone who helps us physically, emotionally, a Vaishnava is grateful. and especially those who help us spiritually, the deepest gratitude. And when we hear about Lord Chaitanya's emphasis on being humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree, offering all respect to others and not expecting for oneself, then we could chant the name constantly. It all actually becomes doable if we're grateful. Because a grateful heart could be extremely forgiving. Because God has forgiven me, and Vaishnavas have forgiven me, so if I'm really grateful for that, I could forgive anyone for anything. Humility, if we're really grateful, you have to be humble to be grateful. Grateful means I don't deserve it, but it's come, and I'm indebted. And to be grateful makes you humble. An ungrateful heart cannot be humble, and an egoistic heart cannot be really grateful. So when we read the prayers of Srila Prabhupada and Jaladutta, when we read the prayers of Prahlad or Dhruva or Kunti or Narottam Das Thakur or Bhakti Vinod Thakur or any of the other great acharyas, the prayers of Gajendra, we find these qualities of gratitude, of humility. It enables us to take shelter from our heart. Gajendra was in a very difficult situation. There was nothing but material impediments. Yes? He was caught in the water and the jaws of a crocodile. There was nothing he could do. Serious impediment. He didn't even have a japa mala. He didn't have any sages or rishis around to speak the Bhagavata, the Gita to him. He was just all alone, you know, with some family members standing around crying, on the verge of death. But he became grateful. When all else failed, grateful for the opportunity to surrender to Krishna, he began to offer beautiful prayers. Prayers of gratitude, prayers of devotion. And Vishnu came. And he wanted to offer something to Lord Vishnu. But what's he going to offer him? He's in the verge of death, being eaten by a crocodile. But he just saw one lotus flower and plucked it with his trunk and offered it to the Lord. That was the perfection of his life. He went back to Godhead that day. So whether we're sitting on a rock in the Ganges, whether we're on a television show, whether we're at home taking care of our babies, and there are so many babies these days, it's unbelievable. almost every other day I get some message a baby was born in the congregation of Radha Gopinath Temple. Whatever expansion that we are through, you know, our outreach in colleges and everything else, I don't think it's as much as our special department of baby production. As years go by, we're going to have a major campus for Gopal's Garden. Be like a university. Whether a mother is home taking care of baby and they're changing diapers, or different mothers have different techniques. I've seen in India, I remember in the Himalayas taking a bus up to the Gangotri, and the mothers would just very lovingly take their little baby and just with both hands stick them out the window. of a moving bus. And the baby was trained. So as soon as she put the baby out the window, the baby started passing urine and stool. Now you're laughing, but I was in the next seat behind. And the wind was blowing in my direction. So, you know, there were I saw little speckles of and salty moisture in my face. And the mother saw that the stool and urine was coming on me. And she just turned around and smiled. She smiled in such a way that you have been blessed. So everything in this world can be interpreted in different ways. I could have gotten really mad and think I am contaminated. There was no showers there. I didn't have a change of clothes. So why not? You can be happy or distressed. She looked at me like I was blessed, so I thought, Himalayan Mataji. I'm blessed. I'm really blessed. So I was very happy. Of course, as soon as we got to Gangotri, I bathed in the Ganges. But until then, I was very happy. I was blessed by a Himalayan baby. Or whether we're in our office dealing with the economic crises of the world, or whether we're sitting on a crowded Bombay train, or whether we're trying to give a class in a temple where the sound system is making all annoying sounds, or they're living in an ashram, overcrowded, whether we're in perfect health, doing all sorts of elaborate yoga asanas, or whether we're in an ICU of a hospital, whatever situation we're in. Prabhupada and Krishna has given us the key where there's no impediment. All Krishna wants to see is our sincere desire to please Guru, to please the Vaishnavas, and to please Radha Gopinath. And to try to chant the holy names in that spirit. And when we create a community where there is such gratitude, and such gratitude is expressed through our sincere eagerness to serve, what gives substance to our service is very much our eagerness. We want to serve. We want to please people. That pleases Krishna. And we please Krishna by pleasing Vaishnavas. And by pleasing the conditioned souls, by giving them the beauty of bhakti. If you ask for water when you come to someone's house and they say, you know, I have so much to do and now you're asking me for water. Here's water. If you want some more, you know, get it yourself. If someone gives you water like that, does it make you happy? So if we serve Krishna as if it's a chore that we don't like to do, does that make Krishna happy? Krishna's a person. But if you go to someone's house and they say, would you like water? We'd love to give you water. If you we'll give you pomegranate juice. We'll give you milkshake. We'll give you whatever you like. Please tell. I want to give you something. Give me water. Okay, here's water. Here's water. If you want more, I'll give you more. Even if you don't want more, I'll give you more. That makes you happy, doesn't it? Because there's love in that eagerness to serve. So a grateful heart is one that wants to serve with eagerness, with care, with compassion. And this is the most important principle of a spiritual community. Is the grateful, eager desire to serve each other. Knowing that Krishna accepts our service through how we serve each other. Kanishta Adhikari is one who serves the deity very carefully, but doesn't understand that Krishna wants us to serve each other. A higher level is to serve the deity very carefully, but to know that the greatest service I can do for them, mad bhakta puja vyadika, is to serve and to please the devotees. To inspire one another with faith, with hope, to inspire one another with an eagerness to hear Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's teachings, and to come together to chant Krishna's holy name.
Krishna, 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 Krish
subject of mothers, one of the foremost mothers of our whole society, Yamuna Devi, Prabhu. Who, through her singing, through her selfless devotion to Srila Prabhupada, very much nourished every single devotee within our society. And at this time, she's in very ill health at Bhaktivedanta Hospital. So I request you to kindly all leave her alone because she needs privacy. But at this particular time and throughout the days, please, with a very sincere heart, let us all offer our gratitude to her and pray to Sri Radha Gopinath and Srila Prabhupada to shower infinite blessings upon her. And if it is their desire, we pray to restore her health once again. Let us take a moment to offer that prayer.
Om Agyanati Manandasya Agyanandana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyacha Sakripa Sindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaisnavibhyo Namo Namaha. When Lord Krishna returned to Dwarka after a long absence from Dwarka, then to the residents of Dwarka, it was as if the sun returned, and if for a long time they had been in darkness. For various reasons. One reason, because there was love. When a sadhu returns, we have a simile experience, because a sadhu is a saintly person who has dedicated his life to the truth. A sadhu has no possessions. The only possession that he has is his faith. And it is on the strength of that faith that a sadhu can render service to the Supreme Lord. And deeply understanding the desire of the Lord, who is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Suridam Sarvadehinam, the friend of all living beings. A sadhu is naturally inclined towards all. And in this way, a sadhu is naturally the well-wisher of all living beings. Thus, the sadhu is offering us a vision about our lives, which is greater than anything we could have ever thought of ourselves. And in this way, we are greatly blessed in the association of the sadhu. Our lives become transformed. Being here today at this time when Radhanath Maharaj returns after a long journey, it reminds me in a way of Krishna's homecoming to Dwarka, because there was a long history when Krishna returned to Dwarka. Krishna had personal relationships with every single person in Dwarka. Krishna was not only the all-attractive Supreme Lord, but Krishna was involved with every single resident of Dwarka. In the same way, the devotee of Krishna is involved with all the devotees who are under his care. And it is that investment on the strength of his faith. It is that investment which is conquering the hearts. One cannot just automatically expect that there will be a loving relationship. A loving relationship is the result of conquering, of making sacrifice, just as one loves his mother because the mother has made such a sacrifice for us. And then love and gratitude can come about. In this way, a sadhu can generate great inspiration. I am somehow or other here today for this homecoming of Radhanath Maharaj. And I'm thinking that we are fortunate that Maharaj came off that rock. From his perspective, it may be all the same whether he sits on a rock in the middle of the Ganges, or whether he sits on a television show in America, or whether he sits here amidst so many of us. But from our perspective, it's a huge difference, and we are most grateful that Maharaj left that rock. Although we certainly would like to go there, to that place, if it's still there today, and pray for that rock like determination, that kind of very strong fixed determination. We pray, at least in our mind, to that location at the rock, to also have that same determination to serve. When a sadhu has deep faith, that faith will translate into service, because it is service that is the quality of love. Faith and love cannot be separated. When one has faith, then automatically love will follow, because faith means we see all good qualities, and there is trust, naturally. So, in this way, seeing that a sadhu is uncompromised and dedicated to the absolute truth, we develop a desire to follow in the footsteps of the sadhus. Srila Rupa Goswami describes this as an essential principle of bhakti in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and speaks about sadhu marg anugamam, that one must follow the path or in the footsteps of the sadhus. So, being here today, I'm fortunate, because, as I mentioned a moment ago, a sadhu conquers hearts by his own sacrifice and his own uncompromised example. And the result is that a transformation takes place within the hearts of others. And thus, a sadhu can make sadhus. And therefore, I came to Chaupati, because it is the residence of sadhus. Whatever position one may be in any position in life, grihitaka, vanataka, sadaharibolodaka, in any position in life, one can become a sadhu, such a saintly person who is thoroughly honest. So here in Chaupati, in this community, we find such sadhus and sadhvis who have dedicated their lives to the service of Guru and Krishna. And in that way, we are always eager to come and catch a few moments of that association, so that we can get some inspiration in our own service. And therefore, in gratitude, I wish to say, especially to Radhanath Maharaj, that I thank Maharaj very much for all the mercy bestowed upon us. And I want to thank all of you also for all your continuing kindness upon my fallen self. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
It's a very nice rock in the Ganges sector. There are so many rocks in this. As long as you don't try to make me a rock star. So, now let us rock to Kirtan.
Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine.